Wednesday, October 2nd, was started out pretty much like any other for Carlos Ramos, a 7-year-old. If he's anything like my 7-year-old boy, he usually has two highlights to his day. First one is when he wakes up in the morning and he gets that first squeeze from his mom as he gets out of bed. The second highlight is usually very closely related. It's at the end of the day when he's reunited with his mom and he gets that hug greeting him at home at the end of the day. Well, Wednesday, October 2nd, started out like pretty much every other one for Carlos Ramos, but the rest of the day would be different. As a matter of fact, the rest of his life will be different. Sometime in between his morning leaving the house and that reunion that would have happened with his mom in the afternoon, Carlos's mom, Sarah Ramos, was standing at a bus stop in between leaving one job, going to the next job. And she was gunned down by a single sniper's bullet. Sarah Ramos didn't come home that day, and she never will. She was the fourth victim of the D.C. area sniper. You know, I wonder what 7-year-old boys whose mom never comes home ever again think when they hear people at church talk about a God that loves them and has great plans for them. One third of the world went to bed hungry last night. Wonder what they think about when they hear people talk about a God that wants them to grow and has good plans for them. In some corners of the world, peace is only defined by those brief moments when the neighbors stop to reload. I wonder what parents who can't even get enough of a break in the mortar fire at night for their kids to sleep, they think of when they hear people talk about a God that's loving and wants them to grow. You know, we don't have to go halfway around the world to wrestle with these questions, do we? We don't even have to leave this auditorium. I wonder what some of you think when we're up here talking about a God that's good and a God that's powerful and a God that has these plans for the art of growth in our life. Yeah, Brian, wait, tell me again. This God, he's all loving and he's all powerful, and yet he lets this kind of stuff happen? I mean, something doesn't add up here. It's what I would call the divine dilemma. And as we continue this series, The Art of Growth, we close it out today, we need to take a look at the tool that pain can actually be for growth in our lives. But before we do that, we've got to get honest about this dilemma, don't we? See, I think a lot of it comes down to our failure to understand, or the struggle we have with understanding, how much God values goodness that's freely chosen. How much God values having this world where everyone isn't absolutely forced in a robotic-like trance to only do good things to each other. We fail to grasp how much God values goodness and love that's freely chosen. I mean, let's, you know, recalibrate here. Think about God again, the things we've learned about God here at Crossroads. 1 John 4:8, probably the most succinct definition of God that I know of. 1 John 4:8 says God is love. And as we've talked about here, what we know there is not only does that mean that God is all-encompassing of love, but also all love comes from God. Every single bit of love or goodness anybody finds anywhere in this creation originates from God. God encompasses all love. And what else do we know about God? You know, this summer when we took a look at the big picture, we took a look at God as creator, we know that God, by definition, if he's God, he's all-powerful. So we have this God that is all-powerful and all-loving. And the question becomes, you know, it's kind of the, what do you get for the guy who has everything? You know, if you were this person, if you were God, and you are all-powerful and all-loving, what's the thing you would desire to experience? Here's how I think we could think about this. Imagine that you're God. Okay. For some of you, this is not a new exercise, so you'll be able to kind of slip right into this one. Imagine that you're God. Or maybe you bring it down a little bit. You are just this this king who's all-powerful and all-loving. You're a king who possesses everything that's possibly within your survey. You can have anything you want. Now, also, you're also an incredibly loving king. As a matter of fact, you're the most perfect picture of love that ever existed, So you're this person who's this combination of kind of, Bill Gates and Mother Teresa and... me, okay? So, all right, well, if that doesn't work for you, pick any two people and me, and I think you'll stay with us here. So you're this being that is all-powerful and all-loving. And that's the picture that we see of God that comes out of the Bible. So what we have is, let's say, this is God. This is what's about God here. So we'll kind of draw a little door here. This is God's house here. God is here, and what is behind this door is everything that's God, everything that's loving. There's nothing behind this door that isn't love or isn't goodness. And there's no love and goodness that exists anywhere that doesn't originate from this door. This is God, what we know of him. We'll call this door number one. Now, the thing is, God creates things in completion. There is nothing that we possibly need that's not behind door number one. Everything that we need is right here. Now, God wants to create a world where people are experiencing goodness and love, and he's experiencing goodness and love that's freely chosen. We can't only have the option of opening door number one, because if this is the only option, there is no option. There's no choice involved whatsoever. People can only choose goodness and love. So what needs to happen? God takes what's been called the divine risk. He says people have to have a chance of being able to choose something other than goodness and love, being able to choose something other than me. So in order to do that, there has to be a door number two. And so over here we see this option, and this is nothing other than being able to choose something other than God. Being able to exercise some sort of free will in some way that I don't totally understand in this life of choosing some things that are other than God. We'll call that door number two. Now the thing is, what can possibly be behind this door? If God is all-loving, if every bit of love and goodness that ever existed comes from here, what can possibly be behind here? Well, you know what? Only things that aren't God. Because if there's any things that are of God behind this door, then we're back to having no choice again. If our only choice is goodness, if I can't pick up a brick and hit somebody in the head if I want to, if I can only choose to do good things with that brick, then I'm back to having no choice at all. So what can be behind here? Only things that aren't God, only things that aren't love. And so what we have here is this divine risk that people are going to choose things that aren't healthy for them. People are going to choose things that are damaging to other folks. And because God creates a completion, we know this door is completely unnecessary. It's only necessary if we want to have a choice that's other than God. And so what happens through this divine risk? Well, throughout time, from Adam and Eve down to you and I, we have been cracking open this door. We've been opening the door. Some of us have just kind of cracked it open just a little bit and peeked in. Others of us, if we'd be honest, we've swung it open, jumped in, and pulled a few friends in with us, haven't we? And what's happened throughout the history of the time, it's been defined by the toxic contents of door number two spilling out into our world. The Bible talks about this. When Paul in the New Testament is writing to the new church in Rome, he talks about this in Romans 5:12. It says, therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, and in this way death came to all because all sinned. Because all of us have flirted with this door number two. So the possibility of people doing bad things, the possibility of pain is inherent in a world in which there'll be any sort of choice that plays out. And regardless of how much this door has been opened, regardless of who has opened it and when they've opened it and when we've opened it, the toxic contents are spilling out. And like one drop of cyanide in an entire whale, well, humanity's water supply is tainted. There's poison in the global well. And it's leaked out of door number two. Now, sometimes the results are obvious. Sometimes there's a direct connection to our flirtations with door number two and what happens. So, for instance, somebody who smokes a pack a day for 20 years shouldn't act shocked when they come down with lung cancer. A nation that develops and cultures and cultivates an evil such as slavery shouldn't be surprised when we end up with the carnage of the Civil War and the ramifications that play out in our neighborhoods to this very day. Sometimes there's a direct correlation, but you know what? Sometimes there's not. Sometimes there's just the general result of there being poison in the well. And sometimes I'm at one point in the well and I'm dumping my toxic contents in, and then several later I'm somewhere else and I take a drink of water and I get poisoned. I'm like, wait a second, I didn't do anything here. No, it's just because generally there's poison in the well. And sometimes we can't even directly correlate our poison to the poison that we drank. There's poison in the global well. You know, I can't explain the Holocaust. I do know God didn't fire the ovens at Auschwitz. I just know there's poison in the well. I can't totally figure out all the environmental problems. I know that God doesn't desire depletion of the ozone layer. I know He doesn't desire extinct species, endangered species, all that kind of stuff. I just know there's poison in the well. I can't explain or stop disturbed fingers on the trigger of an assault rifle in the back of a trunk in suburban Maryland. I just know there's poison in the well. And the long-term impact of these toxic contents is our world unraveling to the place that it is today. Because of God's value of goodness that's freely chosen, He allowed the possibility of badness. He did not create pain, but He allowed for the possibility. And you know, we need to admit that for the most part, we like being relatively free creatures in whatever way we can play that out in this world. The thing is, we don't like the back half of the equation. We like being able to choose between door number one and door number two, but we don't like suffering the consequences because door number two has been chosen throughout time. See, pain is the divine risk of goodness that's freely chosen. But at some point, we need to face it. We need to stand in front of door number two and face it. I've chosen this. I've looked up to my Creator and I've thumbed my nose in some way and said, yeah, I know you have these plans for the art of growth in my life, but I think I can do better. At some point, we need to have the courage to stand and look at this door and say, yes, I opened it and I'm going to deal with the consequences. And at some point, our pain is real, absolutely, and God feels it and He cares for us. But at some point, we need to take our finger out of God's chest and admit that these are the consequences of door number two. And more often than we care to admit, the pain that we end up feeling is a result of us or somebody else playing with fire. We're not going to spend the rest of the time here taking a look at how pain, you know, can kind of play out in the world. I do want to give you a couple resources, though, if that's something you want to really dig further and take a look at. There's two incredible books. I highly recommend both of them that have been written in this area. One's by an author by the name of Philip Yancey. It's called Where is God When It Hurts? And the other one's by C.S. Lewis, who's my favorite author of all time, called The Problem of Pain: How Humor and Suffering Raises Almost Intolerable Intellectual Problems. We're not going to go there the rest of today, though, because it's not about us knowing some tight intellectual answers to these things. That's part of it, but that's not the full picture. See, it's one thing to know, okay, I know how pain can exist in this world, and I know, you know, how choices can play out even if they're not directly related to mine. But it's entirely something else to know those things and then be hit with things. When our tightly woven arguments leap off the pages of our book and that pain comes into our life. I loved several years ago, before the Tyson-Spinks fight, a reporter was talking to Mike Tyson. They said, hey, Mike, you know, Michael Spinks, he's got a plan for how he's going to fight you. He says he has a plan. And here's how Tyson responded. He said, yeah, they all got a plan until they get hit. And you know what? True to form. And in our life, sometimes we can have these really nice plans, understanding how pain is, but then we get hit. Then we get hit and we're reeling. And we don't know what to do with it. And part of it is that we haven't acknowledged that pain is going to be inevitable in this life because of the way this world plays out. And we haven't created a plan for growing through pain. Most of our plans in our lives, if we admit it, most of our plans are around pain prevention. Our lives become defined by pain prevention. When if we look around us and all the generations before us and all that will come after us, we realize pain is inevitable. We need to be thinking very clearly about growing through pain, because it's going to come. But because our lives are about pain prevention, when it comes, we're just left reeling. And all we can think about is, how can I make this go away and make it never come back again? Instead, how can I turn and use this for a tool to get to another place? So I want to take a look here at three ways this pain that God did not thrust on us, God did not wish on us, but recognizes it happened, God can take it and redeem it for our growth, and we can use it as actually a tool in our life as part of this art of growth. The first one involves a helpful differentiation I think we need to make, and that's we need to understand the difference to be able to differentiate between symptoms and sickness. To be able to tell the difference between sickness and symptoms. See, I think a lot of times our pain is not the problem. Our pain is not the problem. It's actually a helpful warning signal. It's an early warning signal that should be pointing us to the problem. But what happens? We feel a little pain. The first thing we do is we reach for Tylenol. We want to mask the symptom. We think the problem is the symptom. And the first thing that somebody does who's trying to master the art of growth is when they're in pain, they do everything they can to look through the symptom for the sickness. Because these pains that we so want to wish away, whether they be physical, they be emotional, they be relational, often they are the very thing that can help us and take us to a more healthy place. The actual pain is, if we learn to look through the symptom for the sickness. But instead of dealing with it in that way, we just want to mask it. We want to mask the symptom and get on with our life. The fact is, as often as not, I believe that pain can be a gift as much as it is a curse. Now, I want to illustrate this here. I want to try something here. So try something a little different here. Illustrate this fact that pain can be as much as a gift as a curse. So if this is your first time here, this is the time when I come out in the crowd and I read people's minds, tell them names of former lovers, and then I do I do some card tricks. So that's what we're going to try here. No, we're going to try some. Could you stand up, please? Stand up, please. Share us your name.
Scott.
Scott, have you been here before?
Yes.
You know, okay, good. All right. Good, okay. Scott. Well, welcome, Scott. Look. All right. Well, thanks for coming. Bless you. Oh, we have a roving camera today. Can you wave to it, Scott? Yeah, okay. Great. Scott, I want to show you something here. Let me see this there. Oh, no. No, wait. There we go. Okay.
You're supposed to react now.
Ow.
Now's when you say out.
Yes.
Ow.
Yes. Out. Now, what? Does that hurt?
Yeah.
Is that, or should I? Now, what is the problem right now? What is the problem right now?
You're pinching.
I'm pinching. The problem is I'm pinching. All right. I can see you're having a little trouble following along. All right. Here's what I want everyone to do. Everyone turn to your right. Turn to your right. To the person to your right, I want you to grab their arm. All right. Grab their. Oh, man. That ain't right. That ain't right. All right. Okay. Turn to the person to your right. You can actually sit down. Thanks.
Thank you.
Turn to your right. Grab their arm. Now. Now, it's still a little dark. So, you singles, I want to tell you, I'm saying pinch, not caress, not rub, and certainly not fondle, all right? Okay, what I want you to do is grab the person's arm to your right, roll up their sleeve if you need to, and I want you to pinch them right now. Pinch them real hard. Not like, no, pinch them real hard. Pinch them like they're your little sister, you know? Yeah. There you go. Now, what is the problem right now? What is the problem? Is the problem the pain that you're feeling? Is the problem that you've got these nerve receptors in your arm that you need to go get rid of? No. I think we've realized the problem, in most cases, it's church people, right? That's where the problem's coming out. The problem is not the pain sensors in your arm. The problem, that's a symptom that's pointing to something that's bigger. You know, doctors have actually spent a lot of time, devoted most of their careers to trying to alleviate pain from people's lives. But the fact is, they have found in times when people have defective pain receptors that there's some diseases that lead to that. They have actually needed to invent pain for people to be able to have healthy lives. Now, there's no graceful way for me to get back up on stage here, so I'm going to scramble back up there. But while we do, we have a little something to distract you here, if you don't mind. All right. All right. There's pain for you. I swore I would get that picture back up before the end of the year. I think I just won $10. Not sure. I have, I've mentioned before that I spent the really early years of my life in Africa. My parents were missionaries in Nigeria, and I brought a little home photo there. There we go. That's, yes, that's That's me on my own stalking my lunch in the jungle, you know. Little Brian's going to eat for one more day. We were in Nigeria, in a rather remote part of Nigeria, and one of the things that my parents did was worked among the leper colonies there. And, you know, this was in the late 60s, so and it could be still going on to this day, I'm not sure, but especially at that time, leprosy was thought to be this awful, contagious thing that what you had to do if somebody had leprosy was just send them away. So they would send anyone that had leprosy to these remote areas, these leper colonies out, you know, in the remote part of the jungle, and that's where they would have to live and die. And so my parents had devoted their time over there, parts of it, to actually going to the leper colonies and help them meet their physical needs. And also, since most of them, if not all of them, couldn't read, actually reading the Bible to them. And it was always interesting, the leper colony, because you would go, and a lot of people there would be missing fingers, or there would be missing toes, or maybe entire limbs. And for a long time, everybody thought that that was a direct result of leprosy. They thought that what leprosy happens is it leads to tissue deterioration, and your limbs slowly fall off from leprosy. And they became all about that, that is, they looked at that symptom and they didn't bother to look deeper and find out if there was another sickness that might be there. There might be another contributor there. And you know what they ended up finding out? They ended up finding out that leprosy does not lead, you know, to your limbs having to fall off. What they found, the problem was, leprosy led to a defective pain system. That lepers gradually couldn't feel pain, couldn't have any feeling in some parts of their body. So they would, you know, maybe burn their hand and not know it and not do anything about it. And then over time, that would cause a huge problem and they might lose a limb. Or they would break their ankle and not be able to feel any pain and not deal with that problem. Or one of the big problems they had, which is why one of the things we did was we tried to bring cats for them and give them all pet cats, because sleeping out where they did, at night some of the animals would come and while they were sleeping, they would bite them and chew on them and they wouldn't be able to feel anything. And they'd wake up in the morning without a toe, and they would think, oh, well, you know, the leprosy has caused that to fall off. It wasn't until they found out it's a defective pain system. They don't have the gift of pain in their life. And doctors have found this, and they've worked a long time now for people with different diseases that have defective pain systems developing artificial early warning symptoms for them. So perhaps, you know, somebody would burn their hand on the stove and not know it because they have a defective pain system. They would develop a tool that if they were putting their hand where there was too much heat, it would cause like a blinking red light to go off, or it would be hooked up to a hearing aid in their ear and it would cause it to buzz and they would know, take your hand off, you're hurting your hand. You know what they found? They found that even very smart, very committed people often would ignore the signal. They would see the red light going off, they would hear the buzzing of the hearing aid, but they would keep doing whatever dysfunctional thing they were doing at the time, even though they may be breaking their wrist. And what doctors found they had to do, the only answer they could do, was they had to find a part in their body where they did still feel pain, and they had to hook up an electric current to that and actually cause them pain. They had to actually feel pain before they would stop the unhealthy behavior. And they even found that the switch for turning that thing off, they had to put it at a place where the person couldn't reach, or they would turn it off and then continue doing the unhealthy activity. What doctors found was that we, as human beings in general, we don't stop when we see the light. We only stop when we feel the heat. And when we don't have the gift of pain in our life, we can end up down a lot worse roads. Doctors spend a lot of their time trying to alleviate pain, and they found when it doesn't exist, they have to invent it. You know, the fact is, we need to develop ourselves to the place where we're encountering pain, we can look past the symptom for the sickness. What is the symptom? What is the sickness? We need to pay attention to the pain in our life. We need to stop and ask ourselves the honest question, have I been here before? Is this a theme in my life? And then we need to actively say, I'm going to find that sickness and I am going to choose the door of growth. Regardless of what's happened in the past, I'm going to choose the door of growth. I'm going to choose pain sometimes. I'm actually going to choose pain because of where that it's going to take me. So we need to ask ourselves, when we find ourselves in this awful cycle of these relationships that just totally trash us, We need to stop and ask ourselves, is that the symptom or is that the sickness? And just maybe it's not about this string of relationships that's trashing me, but it's about I'm getting my self-worth in other people. And maybe, just maybe, there's some stuff from my childhood I need to go dig through. And maybe in the meantime, I need to choose some pain. I need to choose not to date until I get to a healthier place. Maybe this financial stress that we're feeling, maybe if we look past the symptom to the sickness, we'll realize overall there's a trend of a lack of discipline in our lives. And we need to put ourselves in a place where we submit to some controls in our life until we have things under control instead of just taking out another loan. Or when we find ourselves in our fourth job in the last 2 years, we need to stop pointing the finger back at all our terrible bosses and maybe ask ourselves, is there a theme here? Maybe I don't take criticism so well. Even though people around me are imperfect, maybe I can't hear what they're saying. And sometimes our sickness results from somebody else's toxic waste spilling into our life. But even then, we need to look past the symptom for the sickness and say, why do I keep making myself vulnerable to unhealthy people? We can use pain as one of the tools for the art of growth in our life if we look past the symptom for the sickness. And there's a second thing. And this is related to the fact that when we are in pain, we need to learn to open ourselves up to those that are closest to us. We need to realize that God primarily chooses other human beings as his vehicle for delivering comfort to our lives. It's my absolute favorite scripture in the Bible, 2 Corinthians 1, 3-4. It says that God is the God of all comfort, and that he comforts us in all our trouble so that we can turn and comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God. That there's this chain of grace that plays out in our lives, even and especially in pain, if we lean into relationships. If we move beyond this kind of Lone Ranger thing and say, you know what? I'm going to learn to lean into relationships with the people that are closest to me because that is how I will grow through pain. And it's primarily going to be the relationships that God puts in my life that is a differentiator between me being on the backside of that pain, more bitter and broken, or more seasoned and a little bit clearer picture of the life that God has for me. It's going to be the relationships he's put in my life, and can I learn to lean into them? You know, in some African villages, they have this incredible custom where when someone dies, let's say that the man of the house in this one hut dies. What everybody in the village does is they all go, when they hear the news, they all go over to the hut and then they lay down in the dirt all around that hut. And they stay there. They stay there during the day and at night. And they sleep there in the dirt surrounding that hut. They don't say anything. All they do is they go there and they lay around that hut and they're telling that family, it's okay to grieve. It is okay to grieve. We're grieving with you. And you are not alone in this. And isn't it obvious by us laying here that life is not going on the same without this person? They get down in the dirt with their friends. And they say, it's okay to grieve. We're not taking your pain from you, but we're sharing it with you. And often we don't get down in the dirt with our friends because we think that we have to have some eloquent explanation of everything. When in fact, it just needs to be about us just being there. It was, about a year or so into when we started Crossroads. And Nancy and I were expecting our second baby. And we had a miscarriage. And, not an easy thing. And I know from talking to a lot of you that a lot of folks have experienced this kind of pain. And it's a weird, undefined kind of pain that you deal with. And I knew during the time, I'd moved past that place in my life where I had answered the questions pretty much of how pain can exist in the world and all that kind of stuff. So I didn't wrestle through any of that. But I can tell you, at that time, the sources of comfort for us, the greatest tools for our growth during the time, was not some philosopher that Nancy and I could read, not some tape that somebody gave us, not some message at some church that we could go and hear. The greatest tool for our growth at that time in our life was just our friends. You know, Brian talked about, the different levels of friends that we have in our life and, you know, very energizing people. It was the VEPs in our life that surrounded us and said, you know what, we don't have answers for this. This stinks, but we're with you and we're sharing your pain. It was just being there.
We need to learn to lean into relationships when we're in pain, and we need to learn to run to pain when those close to us have it. There's one more way that pain can be this tool for growth in our life. And this is more along the idea of not so much about knowing something, but knowing someone. You know, when my 4-year-old Grace will be outside on the sidewalk and she'll be running and she'll fall down, skin her knee, and I'll go over to her. At that moment, she's not looking for me to come up and give some eloquent explanation of gravity, you know, and how that plays out and how that's going to benefit her later in life, you know. She's not looking for me to come up and to carefully explain to her how she can avoid falling in the future. She's not looking for answers at that point. She's looking for the answerer. See, one of the things that pain can be a primary tool for growth in our life is it can be a time like no others where we learn God's character. We get to know in clearer ways than ever before the answerer, instead of just all these tight little answers. Pain actually helps us grow in understanding God. We've talked during this series about prayer being a tool for growth. We've talked about how the Bible can be a tool for growth. We've talked about how being in community can be a tool for growth. Pain can help us in understanding God in this way as well. And it's first of all understanding about God's character that it's not only that He's aware of our pain, and He is, but that He actually feels it. There's a part in the Old Testament of the Bible, the time before Jesus was here, in the book of Isaiah, where it's foreshadowing and it's predicting Jesus coming and the kind of how He'll be tortured and how He'll be killed. And it foreshadows Jesus' life, and it says that He was despised and rejected by men. He was a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering. You know, the fact is, one of the things that can draw us closer to understanding God is in our pain to realize we are drawing closer to the life that Christ lived. Somehow, we need to understand that God has been there. You know, one author said that there's no pain we can encounter that hasn't first passed through the heart and the hand of God. We actually, when we grow through pain, we become more like Jesus. More like Him than if we hadn't had pain or suffering. And it's these things together, and it's realizing that this is the kind of God that's there for us. That's not off, you know, as some kind of uninterested observer, casually observing our agony. But that He's right there, and He's been there before, and there's no pain that we can experience that He hasn't already had. That we realize we can grow closer to the picture that God has us during pain. And it is only that kind of God, a God that has suffered, that can give us this power to say, throughout all of this, I don't know where this is going to end up, but I know I have these tools and I know I can grow through this. I know that it's this God that gives me the power to overcome. Now, I know that there are some folks in here that you walked in here this morning and you're bleeding. That pain is not some kind of theoretical discussion for you. There's folks sitting in here right now that have had a person that has stood up with them and said, this will be life for better or worse, and you've seen them walk out the door and never come back. There's folks in here that have poured all their vision and all their resources into this business dream, and you've seen it all gone south. And you've seen not only your dream totally be torched, but all your life savings. There's folks in here that have seen you've seen your bodies turn on you, and you can't remember the last time that you got good news from a doctor. You need to know that God does not take this lightly, that He's been there. He's a God of hurt and healing and hope. And through all of this, however it came, through all of this, He has a much higher calling for you than being just this rough thumbnail sketch. You are a masterpiece in the works. That your life with God is about the art of growth. Would you please stand with me? I'm going to pray, and then we're going to come back to this song one more time. And one of the things that we do here is we take steps toward growth by actually having conversations with God. One of the ways we can do that is through a song. And so I want us to use this song, which for just a couple minutes here, as a statement that we have with God that says, I am going to be about finding the growth that's in my pain. Let's pray. God, we pray that you would show us your love and your truth and what it means through you to grow through our pain. What it means through you to overcome. In Jesus' name, amen.